attention, please.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast. Tune into The Drive 3 until 6 p.m. weekdays on the Sports Hub.
I love it. It's brilliant.
Who doesn't love a good victory parade? I love watching them, even if it's not my team celebrating. In fact, come to think of it, I've never been to a championship parade. I was on vacation when the Hurricanes won in 2006. Still beat myself up over that. And my Baltimore Orioles haven't sniffed a title. Anyway, these parades are gold mines for content. Such as this weekend when we discovered an older, rounder, drinking, singing, Brett Hull at the Blues Parade.
I think I got your number!
You can play that for hours and it won't get old. So, right as we were getting off the air yesterday, Kawhi Leonard was playing his greatest hits. That he was smoking a big cigar next to Drake. There was the plant guy who we introduced you to a few days ago who made it to the front of the line and got the plant to Kawhi Leonard. He seemed to know who he was. Drake was very excited about it. Then Kawhi got onto the stage. And this might actually be the first piece of evidence that Kawhi is actually telling the truth about who he is. This might be the first bit of evidence that Kawhi is, in fact, a fun guy.
Enjoy this moment, and have fun with it.
And people are just losing it. Kawhi Leonard mimicking his own laugh. Did he do a good job? Let me just hear the laugh side by side with what we heard way back in October. This is from yesterday. Once again, Kawhi mimicking the Kawhi laugh. And let's go to the older sound. This level of self-realization is pretty rare among people who are that famous. Good on Kawhi. Excellent audio there. Yes, Des.
I'm a little confused. Did you think he was like faking the funk, I guess, in terms of like what he was? Or you were saying this is the best evidence that we have of him being a fun guy?
I don't think Kawhi's fun.
You don't?
Kawhi, I think he's a robot. Like, listen to the way he did this New Balance cut. Like, this is a New Balance ad that he spoke about. Obviously, he was given a script. The only reason it's obvious is because of the way Kawhi delivers this.
Kawhi Leonard here, y'all. Thank you, Toronto, and the whole country. We are world champions. New Balance, we got now. Let's get it.
Let's get it.
I think for me, I used to have a friend that I hung out with that had the same kind of demeanor, and he reminds me of that friend from back in the day. I think we called him Sleepy because he was just kind of real laid back. He was never up or down, but he was the coolest person to hang out with.
Oh, I'm not saying Kawhi's not cool, but I'm not going to go as far to say he's a fun guy when his idea of a fun night is staying at home and playing Jenga with his mom, who he just so happens to live with. Also, him answering the question, who is Kawhi Leonard, with, I'm a pretty fun guy, followed with the laugh that we've all known to be pretty famous. I mean, that was the question he was answering. I'm a pretty fun guy.
True.
How many fun people do you know answer the question, who are you, with, I'm a fun guy?
Well, we cut a bit of that out. Remember, he couldn't see who it was that asked the question. He was
like, I can't even see you.
Yeah, I don't even know who asked that question.
I'm a pretty fun guy.
I love it.
I do too. Former Duke basketball player, current Duke assistant coach, Chris Carrawell, going to join us in just a little while. I want to talk about the NBA draft with him. Also look ahead to what the Blue Devils are pulling in next season. In my mind, as we're 2 days away from the draft, I think this is a five-player draft. In other words, there are five guys I'm convinced are going to be stars unless there's a surprise outside of the lottery, such as a Giannis or a Kawhi Leonard. The two safest picks in the draft, of course, you have Zion Williamson number one, Then I think it's DeAndre Hunter of Virginia. Hunter's upside, it isn't as good as R.J. Barrett's or Ja Morant's, but this is a player who could defend all five positions, did it in college, is already a very polished player, despite being younger than some of the prospects we're seeing out there. He was only there for 2 years at Virginia. You rarely see guys going into the pros who are as defensively sound as DeAndre Hunter is. And from an offensive standpoint, even though his jumper is a bit spotty, great driving ability, can push it in transition, I think outside of Zion, he's the biggest sure thing. Other than Zion, though, I think Darius Garland is my favorite player in this draft. We have little sample size of him, though. A very small sample. He played 5 games at Vanderbilt. He dominated those games, but he wasn't playing good teams. This was a guy a lot of people were excited about going into last year because of what he did in USA basketball. He's 6'2", a little skinny. You could be concerned about the knee, but his cutting ability and ability to step back, he reminds me a lot of Kemba Walker. This is a player that I'm pushing my chips in on. I think he should be the number 4 pick, whether that pick is being held by the New Orleans Pelicans, or if the Atlanta Hawks are able to trade up. It seems like R.J. Barrett is a sure thing to go number 3 to the Knicks. The Knicks turned down an offer from the Hawks for number 8 and number 10, according to ESPN earlier this afternoon. I feel like I'm alone on this island when it comes to R.J. Barrett. I think R.J.'s better than Ja Morant. I like R.J. I trust R.J. to be a better player than Ja Morant right now. He will be a better pro because Duke prepares you a lot better than Murray State. Of course, for competition reasons, it fits. Playing in the ACC is going to prepare you a lot better than playing in the Missouri Valley. But on top of that, Duke does things differently than any other team in the ACC does in terms of the attention that they get, how they travel nationally, the fanfare following them, the hate following them, the level of scrutiny following them. But despite all that attention on the outside, they open up their locker rooms. So we're able to go in there and be right next to these guys as if they're pros. To the point where I brought it up to Duke communication staffers. Why do you do this? Coach K, as long as he's here, we're going to open up the locker room because these guys are going to be pros next year. And this is what they're going to be dealing with. And we're trying to prepare them. R.J. Barrett was asked to be a jump shooter and a three-point shooter at times for Duke, when that's not what he was billed to be when he was the number one player going into college, over Zion Williamson, over Cam Reddish, over Ja Morant. That's not what he was asked to do. He's an excellent drive and kick player. He will be great in pick and roll basketball. This will be a seamless transition. Probably out of the players in the top 5, he's the player that is going to transition probably best in the near term out of anybody in this draft. So I like R.J. Barrett more than I like Ja Morant. And I like a lot of guys in this draft, but I do believe it's a 5-player draft. Your thoughts are welcome on Twitter at SportsHubTriad, 336-777-1600. If you want in on the show, intern Nick picking your calls. Desmond Johnson behind the scenes as well, producing this show. Yes, Des.
I do agree with R.J. probably out of those top 5 guys that are going to get picked. He's probably the most NBA ready in terms of just from stuff I saw during the 40-game sample size we had of him at Duke. I've constantly compared him to Tracy McGrady in terms of his game, like a young Tracy McGrady.
I really like that comparison.
Yeah, he went left a lot more than I wanted him to. Although come to find out, he's actually right-handed. Yeah. So, you know, which is crazy. But I think the NBA game really suits RJ better than maybe even Zion coming out the gate, because he can create his own shot. He can take the jumper. He's got 3-point range. For RJ, I think it's really going to come down to where he lands, and it looks like it's going to be the Knicks.
It's going to be the Knicks.
Unless, you know, the Knicks trade it off, or, you know, I'm kind of expecting a lot of fireworks in terms of trades and stuff.
Well, they denied the Atlanta Hawks, who had the most to give. The 8 and the 10 they offered the Knicks, they turned that down today.
Oh, wow, really? So, see, it's a deep draft, but it's so top-heavy at the very top, those first three, you know?
It is, but I think it's a 5-player draft. I think whoever's at four should draft Garland. And then I think DeAndre Hunter is going to be the fifth. I don't think Jarrett Culver's a complete player. I see some people saying he could play point guard. I don't really see that. And even though they went to the championship game. Also, with Coby White, I'm a big Coby White fan, but I have too many questions to call him a top five player in this draft. First off, position-wise, I don't see him being a point guard. I don't. I think he's better suited as a two guard. At Carolina, I mean, think off the top of your head, when you think of Coby White highlights, it's not him making the extra pass or having that great court vision. It's him going coast to coast, breaking people down, getting to the basket, shooting over people with the 6'5 frame. He has a small wingspan. He's not a good defender. He's still a lottery pick, but I feel less comfortable with him than some of these guards like Garland, and I feel less comfortable with Coby White than I do RJ Barrett and Ja Morant as well.
Would you have you heard the comparison of Coby White to like a young Russell Westbrook in terms of size, speed, the way the games were when they first came into the league?
I hear a lot of that. I just don't see the athleticism. I don't see Coby White having that level of freak athleticism that I've only seen Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook have the last 15 years of the NBA.
That's fair.
So that's my one holdup. Now, he's still a top 10 pick. In fact, if I'm going through the players I like the most, it goes in the order of Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Ja Morant, Garland at the fourth pick, Darius Garland. Number five, DeAndre Hunter. Coby White probably six, just because I'm a little down on Jarrett Culver. Cam Reddish, eight. This might surprise some people, but I like Bol Bol. I like Bol Bol right there with Jackson Hayes, and he's in the same mix with Nas Little, too. And then you get to the Rui Hachimuris and Brandon Clarks of the world.
Bol Bol's an interesting pick. I wouldn't, depending on what happens ahead of him, I wouldn't mind if Charlotte's still sitting at 12 and Nasir Little's gone. I wouldn't mind taking a shot on Bol Bol, but he needs some weight.
He needs some weight, but we also don't know about his injury status, too. He's pretty brittle, got injured right at the start of last year, and unlike, say, Garland, who's 6'2", we're talking about a 7-footer handling the basketball. As you mentioned, a pretty skinny guy. I'm concerned about that. There are some people that have him being taken right near the lottery. There are others who barely have him in the first round and some who have him in the second round. So Bol Bol will be an interesting one to watch. As we mentioned, Chris Carrawell, Duke assistant basketball coach, in just a little bit, we'll get to Joe Wiles' calls as well. The second volume of Joe Wiles' calls from the first half of the Dash season, the movie lines that you've sent in that he's integrated into his broadcast. A lot of things to do today. But up next, why your cash will soon be no good in stadiums across America. This is The Drive.
Okay, here we go.
This is The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
We're a little over 48 hours away from the NBA draft. A lot of local ACC players are going to hear their names called very early on in the draft. Players who were coached by our next guest, it is Duke assistant basketball coach Chris Carrawell, former Duke great on the hardwood, kind enough to spend some time with us while he's out on the recruiting trail. But before we get to the players you coached, Chris, 19 years ago, you were the 41st pick by the San Antonio Spurs. What do you remember about draft night 2000?
It was a bad night in my opinion. I thought I was going first round. That didn't happen, and so I kind of lost sight. You know, when you look back on it, getting drafted by the Spurs was a really great thing. But you know, you get so consumed about being a first round pick or like, that you forget that the dream is to actually get drafted. And I was their only draft pick, but at that time, I was disappointed in where I was selected, you know, not by the team, but just the round. And so I would tell all these young guys, they shouldn't worry about today is, you know, the draft is one day. It's, you know, it's not, if you really believe in, want to be an NBA player and a good NBA player, you could do it. And if you get caught up in one night, which I did, it could mess you up. So would be my advice to the younger guys.
Chris, what exactly did that look like, though? When you say you were upset, you're sliding in the draft, we hear guys go for a walk, we hear guys go up to their room. What were you doing to showcase or display your displeasure?
Yeah, well, you know, I was at my house and I had, you know, the local media in St. Louis was there. I had actually a draft party. I was actually invited to the draft but declined. So, you know, I'm thinking like, you know, I'm going to be a first round pick. So I actually, you know, go upstairs and like, you know, you just hoping and wishing and praying that, you know, your name gets called in the first round. I thought I had a great shot to go with Charlotte at 19. Yeah, with, you know, Bobby Fields, you know, the late, great Bobby Fields that just passed, and I thought I was that type of defender, you know, glue guy that could, you know, could really help the Hornets. But, you know, and then I had a great workout with Utah at 23, so I'm thinking, like, you know, maybe, and it just never materialized. So you get the second round draft pick, and I was their only pick. It was actually a great pick. You know, Popovich, you got Duncan. But if your mind, if your mindset and mentality is not in the right place, you know, you won't be ready. And I wasn't.
When was the first time you heard the name Zion Williamson?
Shoot, man, I started hearing about that kid as a junior in high school. And actually, you know, I used to watch his highlights with my youngest son. And like, yo, you see this kid? You know, like the dunks were amazing. Like, we're amazing. And so, you know, you watch, even if, you know, you hear about it, then when you watch the YouTube clip, I used to watch them on YouTube.
It was
an 8-minute highlights, and they were amazing.
It was the most fun thing, Chris, to be around the team this year and go up to, after Zion would have an amazing dunk in a game, go up to RJ, say, hey, what do you think, 0 to 10 of that dunk? And he would go, I thought it was a 4 or a 5, and Zion would hear him say, a 4 or a 5? And eventually he got to the 10 by the end of the year. But that's just the stuff we saw in games. I've traveled with basketball teams. I know how it works when you have shoot-arounds and you have practices, that maybe the craziest stuff you see happen when the cameras aren't around. What's the craziest thing you've ever seen Zion Williamson do athletically?
But, you know, he would do something every day in practice that was amazing. You know, dunk, jump, you know, just – you don't think he's going to dunk the ball over 3 guys. You know, just, I mean, we had a pretty athletic team. But more so than the dunks, it's the body control. You know, my favorite dunk of the year, I think, was the one, well, 2 of them. The one against Virginia when, you know, he in and out, like Ty Jerome, who's going to be an NBA player, and Huff from UVA, like, kind of like, really fouls him hard on his finishing hand, and he completes the play. And then the Carolina dunk in a tight situation, you know, he steals the ball and then jumps outside the paint off one leg and just, man, it's amazing. You know, of course, to go with the 360s, but, you know, he would do something every day in practice, whether it was a dunk or body control or you throw a pass where, yeah, he's not going to catch that, and then he just rises above, you know, and dunks it. Just, he was amazing, man. Amazing.
Duke assistant.
And I've seen Vince Carter, you know, and I watched Vince Carter. So
yeah, you went. I think you got a good look at Chris Vince Carter, didn't you?
Yes, right. That's right.
Chris,
so I would know.
Chris Carroll, well, definitely would know. And it's crazy to think that Vince Carter guy is still playing basketball, the Duke assistant, with us here on The Drive. One thing we hear about when we talk about freshman teams, usually – togetherness usually is lacking when you have teams that haven't played together or guys who haven't played together that often. But the thing that we saw last year, Coach K pointed it out the first month of the year, these guys all love each other and they're together. Is there a story, speaking about RJ and Trey and Zion and Cam Reddish, that best quantifies how together and how close this group was?
Yeah, you know, it was just from the beginning, you know, I guess because those guys get to know each other through, you know, the All-Star circuit, you know, the McDonald's games, the Nike brand games, all these games, and they developed that relationship early on, I guess, through that process. And then, you know, I really do give a lot of credit to Zion in that aspect, because as much hype that was surrounding him, I mean, he was the best teammate that you could possibly have from a guy receiving that much attention. You know, he was great with all his teammates. And I think that just spread throughout the course of the team. And then RJ, I give him a lot of credit because, man, he had a heck of a year, man. Are you kidding me? In any other year, he'll be the number one pick in the draft. You know, to be honest with you, but he, him and Zion are brothers, and Trey and Cam, those guys were really close, and you don't get that. In today's age, it's hard to have a team for, you know, we point to the four freshmen, but the team embraced all of that. And they really were together. And I think Zion, being the leader of that, the hype and all the attention every day, he was always willing and to share with his teammates. And that's what makes him, like, he's the guy. He's the guy.
Chris Carrowell's out on the recruiting trail with Duke men's basketball. The assistant coach kind enough to spend time with us. Chris Spatola, a former Duke assistant, will be hanging out with us a little bit later on from now. But before we let you go, we're talking so much about the players who are gone now, who are going to be going to the NBA. You brought in a great recruiting class this year, you and Coach K and the other assistants. How do you suspect next year's Blue Devils will look different stylistically, considering what you're bringing in?
Yeah, I think we have a chance to be a better team. You know, we're going to be better. You don't know that. You know, we're losing three of the top 10 picks in the draft. And so this team would be different. You know, we do really have some good incoming freshmen. Wendell Moore, Vernon Carey, Cassius Stanley, and Matthew Hurt, those guys can play. And they've been good players for a long time. But they're different. You know, I always say Zion RJ was Jordan and Pippen. Then you got Cam Reddish. And any other year, if he's on his Duke team, maybe he's a 1, 2, 3 pick. And so, you know, trying to replace those guys, you know, what I would tell them is, hey, man, hey, run your own race, play your own game. But we have a chance because they're all talented to be really good, but it's going to take a while, you know, because you only have these guys. You're trying to build a team with young guys. But Trey Jones coming back is huge for us, and then Javon coming back. You know, we have some returning guys coming back that will help the younger guys. And I think you'll have more balance with this team.
Chris? Thank you for spending time in Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and Burlington today. It's appreciated.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Anytime, guys.
You got it. That's Chris Carrowell spending time with us on a, what day is it? Tuesday afternoon. Going crazy over here. Good stuff from Coach. Bringing in a bigger lineup when you have Winston and Cassius Stanley, I should say, rather. And Vernon Carey, you bring back Javon Delorier. It's likely going to be a bigger lineup, and there's going to be more three-point shooting, so I'm sure stylistically, Coach K, as he's done really the last 10 years since starting to recruit the one and done, he's going to find a way to adapt a style to the personnel, rather the other way around, try to have the style or dictate a style onto your personnel. I think it's going to look a lot different the way that the Blue Devils played versus what it was last year, which lacked a lot of structure offensively. It was a lot of motion on the perimeter, give a guy a ball, and then have him try to make a play one-on-one like Zion or RJ beyond the perimeter. It was a lot of that. It was pretty simple. It worked for Duke. That's why they were the number one team in the regular season last year. At the end of the year, but I expect it to be more structured and it to look like a more classic Coach K Duke team next year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It seems like the past 2 years in particular, there's been a lot of ISO ball for Duke. Like at times, it looked like they weren't even running plays. They would just, you know, give the ball to RJ at the top, give it to Zion at the top, let him create.
That's what you see with younger teams. Yeah. Like you need less structure because the team 2 years ago, they couldn't play man-to-man consistently. They had to play zone. And last year, they could play man-to-man defensively, and they grasped a lot of that. Trey Jones, Zion Williamson, pretty good, and Cam Reddish, very good defenders. But offensively, the way it was constructed, since you didn't have many shooters, you had to kind of have players who could beat someone off the dribble and have iso ball. Had to be that way.
This might be the first class K has had in about 3 or 4 years where it's not like the majority of them coming in are going right back out. Like, I think he's got a couple guys in this class that are going to be at least 2 year guys. Carey's probably the one guy that's going to be a one and done for sure.
I think Stanley and Moore might be multiple year guys.
Yeah, Hurt could be borderline too, just depending on how much strength he can put on.
I think Hurt's going to be a one and done guy.
Just depends on how good of a year he has, I guess. But Carey's probably gone.
The Drive is brought to you in part by your friends at Twin Peaks Restaurant. Visit them, Haines Mall Boulevard in Winston-Salem. And Des, I know this isn't quite your thing, but are you familiar with the CONCACAF? The CONCACAF Gold Cup.
The what?
The CONCACAF Gold Cup.
It sounds familiar, but no, I'm not familiar with it.
Get the Twin Peaks cheer on the USA as they make their Gold Cup debut in their game against Gowanna. Game time, 9 o'clock tonight. Kick it with Twin Peaks. Haynesville Boulevard and Winston-Salem. What does CONCACAF sound like? CONCACAF.
Sounds like a...
a cereal.
Sounds like some kind of decaf coffee.
CONCACAF. What are you ordering? CONCACAF.
A little bit of sugar.
I think. CONCACAF. A lot of sugar. Going to be in Charlotte, I think, this weekend. The Gold Cup. The CONCACAF World Cup. How many goals, how many times is our broadcast going to be interrupted tomorrow while the U.S. women are playing?
Ooh, what time do they start?
Right as the show gets on the
air.
Oh,
yes. Who are they playing?
Well,
it can't be. There's no way they could get to what they did opening round, right? There's no
way.
Right,
there's no way it's possible that could ever happen again. They're playing Sweden, who's one of the best teams in the tournament.
Okay, because then again, we didn't expect it to happen 13 times while we were on the air either when we suggested it. So, I don't know. I don't know, man. I'd be happy with a healthy 5 or 6.
I've got a can't-miss story to tell you about from earlier this week. That's next on The Drive.
We need to talk.
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 This is The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920.
The lowest form of communication.
Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
I'm going to go dealer's choice. Go to the control room. Should we play Volume 2 of Joe Wiles' movie line from the first half? Or do you want to get to a story, an amazing story, in my travels in Winston-Salem last night? Something that happened to me in Winston-Salem that hasn't happened to me in a half dozen or so years.
Let's hear the story first, and then we'll get to Joe. How about that?
Okay. So, last night, I was trying to venture out, try a new restaurant, meet with a friend, and maybe grab some pizza, maybe grab some Mexican food. I don't know if I want to out the name of this brewery, but it might be my favorite brewery in Winston-Salem, maybe in the Triad, until last night. I go into this place, and I beat my friend there. I go up to the bar. I order my favorite beer. I knew exactly what I wanted as soon as I got there. And then the lady said, hey, can I check your ID? Sure. So she goes to grab the beer as I'm pulling out my ID. The guy next to me does the thing that, newsflash and PSA, you should never do this. It's not funny. It's a joke that everybody does. I don't remember the last time someone checked my ID. It should make you feel young. Don't say that joke. It's been said for probably 50 to 60 years. We get it. I look younger. She's checking my ID. Anywho, she comes back. I give her my ID. And I need to get it renewed sometime soon. I do, probably by September. My face is smudged a little bit. But my hair, unmistakable. Glasses, you can see I'm wearing glasses. She looks at it and says, yeah, you're going to have to get a new ID. Pay about 10 bucks. I'm not giving you a beer.
Oh, wow.
She turned me away.
Oh, wow.
As if I was McLovin. How old was McLovin in the movie? Mid-20s, around that area?
He's 20, like, 25.
She took me to be McLovin, going to a brewery, trying to get a beer. She turned me away. I responded, are you being serious? She said, yeah, I'm just doing my job. And I don't know, maybe I was being the jerk here, but I didn't take that answer well. I just said, yeah, but you're being a bit much.
Oh.
You're being a bit much. I'm being a bit much. Yes, you're being a bit much. And I walked out.
So
that happened to me last night. I got turned away a beer. I'll show you the ID.
I was going
to
say, there's only one brewery downtown. You said downtown Winston.
Oh, no,
right?
There's definitely.
Well, the biggest one.
No. There are many breweries downtown Winston-Salem.
But this wasn't the biggest one.
No, this is a relatively new brewery. It's probably my favorite brewery.
Oh, okay.
Intern Nick, take my ID here. See, you take a look at this and you see if this is grounds. You see if this is grounds for me being denied a beverage as if I'm a 20-year-old seeking expensive craft beer. Like, what 20-year-old is going out there saying, I want to have a honey blonde of sorts? Take it to Dez, intern Nick. He's just standing here looking at it.
He's investigating it.
He's investigating it right now, as if he's going to hand it right back to me and report back to you 10 feet away.
Oh, my gosh, dude. Have you been buying beer with this?
Yeah, I mean, all the time.
What did you do? It looks like you put, like, sandpaper on it or something. I can't even...
It's
It doesn't even look like you.
It's an older ID, but, I mean, the glasses...
No.
So what... I got to get it renewed, but am I going to... She is not right
in this
instance.
She was right, dude. I can't make you out in this picture. I thought it was going to be kind of like, oh, she should have just gave it to you. Nah, man, this picture doesn't even look like you anymore. It looks like you were trying to pass a fake ID. It really does.
I've never once been stopped by anybody.
That's insane.
Saying I need a new ID, saying that I shouldn't get a beer.
Oh my gosh, what have you been doing to this thing?
It's just been like, in my wallet.
It's like you
for
can't,
years.
There's no legible like handwriting on the back whatsoever. All the barcodes are smeared off. I'm looking at the picture. For starters, the address throws you off too. If you're here, if somebody shows me an ID where I can't really tell the picture,
what town is it? Is it Colorado or North Carolina?
It's Youngsville, North Carolina.
Oh,
never even
wow.
heard of it before.
That's
yeah.
where I grew up.
So I'm like, all right, here, let's see. Says it's a man. Yeah, you need to go to the DMV, dude. Like tomorrow.
Am I an organ donor? I forget.
You are, McLovin. You're an organ donor.
So, you
man.
Am I?
Look at that.
Am I the jerk here? You don't even really need to see the photo. Am I the jerk here? 336-777-1600. While we try to get that question answered, let's get to volume 2 of Joe Wiles movie calls.
And you just have to love that at bat from Carlos Perez. And, of course, the end result of it, he just flung his bat to the right and toward the dugout as if he was like a New Yorker saying, I'm walking here, I'm walking here. And, of course, it gives the Dash their first run of the night. The batter, Wilbur Santiago, he made an error. A one. Inside, count of 1-1. And that led to ultimately 3 runs coming in to score as all the runs unearned. So Nick Madrigal saying, I'm the guy that does his job. Looking across the field at his counterpart. You must be the other guy. The 0-1 offering. Frost with a towering pop-up foul down the left side, and the count now is 0-2. Well, we've been getting in movie lines all night, but could that count as one? Here's the 1-2. Bounced in by Kincannon, it's 2-2. So it's San Diego, and you know, a famous person from San Diego once said, you know, the only way to bag a classy lady by giving her 2 tickets to the gun show. That type of San Diego. Not Santiago. Just wanted to clarify. Castillo has been working so well with Carlos Perez behind home plate tonight. Almost as if he's looking out to home plate, saying slowly, you complete me. 3-2. Dash pitching coach Matt Selesky slowly walking out to the mound. Jose Neen warming up in the bullpen down the third baseway. Selesky looking at Burns saying, do you understand the words coming out of my mouth? Reassuring him to calm down. LaRoot saying after that pickoff attempt that got his base runner Davis out, are you serious? Bases umpire Mark Bass saying, I am serious. Don't call me Shirley.
Oh, what a great way to finish it. The one that Joe messed up.
I think it's the only one all year.
The one that Joe botched. All right, which of the ones that you just heard in volume 2 is the best of the batch? Flesh Wound has already moved on to the finals. We have 4 volumes. This is the second one. Which one, just play the sound for me, which one do you nominate as being one of the 4 best from Joe?
I'm going to go with this one here.
And you just have to love that at bat from Carlos Perez. And, of course, the end result of it, he just flung his bat to the right and toward the dugout as if he was like a New Yorker saying, I'm walking here, I'm walking here. And, yeah. Of course, it gives the Dash their first run of the night.
That is just because of the accent, that's one of the 4 best. It's one of the 4 best. I'm walking here. I'm torn.
I thought he really delivered You Complete Me well.
That's a good one,
but
too.
But the Ron Burgundy one was the highest degree of difficulty. Talking about bagging a classy lady, I mean, this is the highest degree of difficulty among the ones we've given him probably in the first half.
Here's the 1-2. Bounced in by Kincannon, it's 2-2. So it's San Diego, and you know, a famous person from San Diego once said, you know, the only way to bag a classy lady by giving her 2 tickets to the gun show. That type of San Diego. Not Santiago. Just wanted to clarify.
He saved himself from laughing by saying, just wanted to clarify. That's the one I nominate. Intern Nick, is there one that you particularly like a lot of the bunch?
I'm the guy that does his
movie. Going Leonardo DiCaprio. Actually, it was Matt Damon in The Departed.
The batter, Wilbur Santiago, he made an error. A 1. Inside, counted 1-1. And that led to ultimately 3 runs coming in to score as all the runs unearned. So Nick Madrigal saying, I'm the guy that does his job. Looking across the field at his counterpart. You must be the other guy. The batter, Wilbur Santiago.
All right, we need one more to vote on here. On Twitter at SportsHubTriad, 336-777-1600. I think it's either between You Complete Me or Do You Understand the Words Coming Out of My Mouth?
That's exactly where I was going to.
The latter of the two? Those are the two best ones of the bunch.
Do You Understand the Words Coming Out of My Mouth?
All right, let's hear it.
Dash pitching coach Matt Selesky slowly walking out to the mound. Jose Neen warming up in the bullpen down the third baseway. Zaleski looking at Burns saying, do you understand the words coming out of my mouth? And reassuring him to calm down.
All right, those are the four. Those are the four for the Volume 2 of Joe Wiles' calls. You can vote on it on Twitter at SportsHubTriad. Whichever one receives the highest amount of votes, the most votes, gets to move on to the final round of Joe Wild calls. So again, find that at Sports Hub Triad, and you have Ron Burgundy trying to bag a classy lady by giving her 2 tickets to the gun show. Do you understand the words coming out of my mouth? And then of course you have I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy. Oh, and I'm walking here. How could I forget about that? With the accent too. It's tough to pinpoint a favorite because I thought Swingers had the upper hand yesterday and I was left disappointed. You are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, and WMFR High Point. Those signals making up the Triad Sports Hub.
Here we go!
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham, the Sports Hub, at AM 600, AM 920.
Chatting with ESPN college basketball analyst Chris Spatola. The NBA draft just a few days away, and a lot of ACC players to talk about. Chris is somebody who follows college basketball about as close as anybody. We had Chris Carrawell, former Duke basketball player, on the show a little bit earlier on. Current Coach K assistant. Chris used to be an assistant for Coach K on that 2010 national championship team. And did you guys ever cross paths when you were at Army? Did you ever face Carrawell's Duke teams?
We did. It must be legendary, that matchup. Yeah, we did, man. My Army team came down and played at Duke twice here in Durham, and we played in 2000 and 2001, so we played Sewell's senior year. And I gave Duke 15 in that game. We ended up losing by about 45 or 50. So you could say I got the points in garbage time, but I still give it to Sewell. I still let him know that I got 15 on his team.
Looking at some of the prospects, I feel like we talk too much about Zion Williamson, talk about Duke. It's hard not to talk about Zion and some of the other Duke prospects that are projected to go in the top 10. But I want to start with Coby White and talk about him a little bit because he's a player that interests me. He had a lot of tremendous spurts with North Carolina his freshman year, and Roy Williams went as far to call him the best scoring point guard he's had in Chapel Hill. But considering his lack of wingspan, considering the defensive concerns, considering maybe the fact he might not be a true point guard, what position do you think NBA execs are thinking he'll play at the next level?
Yeah, I think they're hoping point guard because I think, the demands of that position have obviously changed. I think it is much more of a scoring position as the game has moved more to pick and roll. So, which is to say the guard coming off of the pick and roll has got to at least be a threat to score. And if he's as good a scorer as White is, it's a huge boon. I mean, I don't understand, Josh, the love of Darius Garland. And I'm not saying Garland's not a first-round pick. I don't understand why there's this love of Garland more than White. And if the assessment is that he's more of a traditional point guard, I reject that. I think White became better at the position as the year went on. There is no guard who's going to have the scoring acumen that White does. I think he became a better distributor. I think his turnovers, he became better with turnovers as the year went on. I think his ability to guard the position got better. So I think he's terrific. You mentioned his ability to score and what Roy said. I think he's the quickest point guard to come out of there, with the exception of maybe Ty Lawson. So I love him. I have all year. I've been really high on him, and I think as a pro, I think he's in that particular game where you can't touch a guy. It's much more free flowing and open. I think he's terrific.
See, I'm somebody who actually really likes Garland because of his USA Basketball background and what he showed there. You talked about pick and roll basketball as a point guard. That's somebody who executed it about as well as anybody. Kobe, I understand his scoring ability, and he's somebody with his 6'5 height, he could shoot above closeouts and defenders in a way I think someone like Garland, who's 6'2, probably can't. But I understand the hype there. Maybe it might be an odd circumstance that his hype going into his freshman year might have helped him, that he didn't play as much his freshman year, that people were still drawing on kind of the unknown, the mystery box, if you will, with Garland.
Yeah, I mean, well, the first thing between the two of them, and again, when we're talking about lottery picks, we're almost splitting hairs. I'm not saying that he's not a first-round pick. I'm not saying he's not a lottery. But between the two of them, I mean, first things first, Kobe White is 6'5", 190 pounds, and a pretty built 190 pounds. Darius Garland, 6'2", and maybe 170, coming off a bad knee. So, that's the thing. There's a five-game sample size of Garland. It's not bad. They're playing not great teams. But, I think a lot of folks are also using this sort of take him out of the equation and they don't win a game in ACC or SEC play. I think we're splitting hairs. But my thing is, I'm taking the full body, full year sample size from Kobe White, and I think I'd rather be able to teach the position to a guy who is as capable a scorer as White is versus, taking a shot on a guy who's coming off a bad knee, is slight of build. I stood next to him at the combine, and he's not much taller than I am. And a guy, again, who's only played five games in college, and you're really taking a shot on, like you said, the USA basketball sample and then the five-game sample that he had at Vanderbilt.
Chris Spatola of ESPN with us here on Twitter at Chris_Spatola. Aside from Zion Williamson, who are you most comfortable saying is going to be a great player in the NBA?
R.J. Barrett. I mean, you can't, like, I'm a big believer, Josh, in not allowing your eyes to deceive you. And what we saw out of that dude this year, and let's not forget, he reclassified. So he could have been playing in high school last year. This kid came in as a freshman and was phenomenal. I mean, he was living in the shadow of Zion. I think in some respects he was underrated as a result of that. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy who is a legit 6'7", about 210, 215 pounds, and just he scores as he breathes. And he got better when Zion went out. His numbers went up. He's got the full package. Now, look, are there holes? Absolutely. There are holes in all of these guys, to include the top three guys who we assume are going to go Thursday night. Does he have a little tunnel vision? Absolutely. Does he need to become a better shooter, free throw shooter? Absolutely. But, I mean, you're tight. It'd be hard-pressed to find a skill set as complete. And in a game that is NBA-ready, these guys, we saw Jay Barrett, to me, Josh, is a no-brainer.
NBA ready, those are the two words I think of when I think about these guys coming into the draft from Duke. Often everybody spends their attention on Zion Williamson, and since RJ was projected to be the top pick going into last year, I think it's strange to say a guy who's going to be picked third is being overlooked a little bit, but I feel like that's happening when Duke, when you're at Duke and you play with that kind of talent around you and you play for that coach and Mike Krzyzewski, and even little things like opening up the locker room and being available to the media and having guys approach you while you're changing and have that kind of hype surround you, you can't tell me RJ Barrett isn't more prepared to play in the pros than Ja Morant. I almost feel like it's sacrilege to say it right now, but I agree with, I think, with what you're saying. I feel more comfortable, if it was me, taking RJ Barrett over Ja Morant.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I understand why Memphis likes Morant. I understand the need for that position if you're ready to part ways with Mike Conley. And I do believe that position to get a guy who can play it at that level becomes really important. So I'm not, you know, and I know you're not doing this. I think there are a lot of people who feel differently than you and I, but
we're splitting hairs.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, again, yeah, it gets back to that point. We're splitting hairs, and it's a matter of taste. And really, a lot of this draft, especially outside of those top three picks, is beauty ends up being in the eye of the beholder. And what you think helps your organization or what you like is ultimately what you're going to choose.
Chris Spitola with us from ESPN. Since you were at the Combine, give me somebody who isn't going to be taken in the lottery that you're convinced is going to be good.
Bruno Fernando, first and foremost. I think he is, and there were a couple times this year where I watched him, I said, man, that dude is a top five pick. And now there are times where he goes in and out. He's still really raw offensively. But he reminds me a lot of Clint Capella. He's just really active. He's a legit 6'10". He's gotten stronger and bigger in the couple years he was at Maryland. And I think he kind of fits the mold of the younger or the new age big guy in the NBA. And I'll tell you another guy that ACC folks are going to know that I've really been high on is Biondo Cabangeli. I thought he was kind of moving up boards. I've been shouting his name to anybody who would listen. I just think he's a guy whose game, again, continues to develop. And I think there's some questions like how do you not start at Florida State? And I think you have to understand how Leonard Hamilton operates to kind of figure that piece of it out. Hits a face-up shot, can block some shots. Not a tremendous athlete and not a great runner. Like, he's not a great north-south runner, but I think he's going to be in the right fit and next to the right partner inside. I think Cabangeli's got a bright future too.
Before we let you go, Chris, I want to get your reaction to this quote from a scout telling Seth Davis of The Athletic on Zion Williamson. New Orleans will be a great place for him because it's not like New York. Do you think it can be better for Zion, considering his personality, somebody who always seemed to deflect attention from himself, which seems strange to say considering how much attention he received this year? It's better for him to be in a market like New Orleans versus New York or L.A. to develop?
I don't share that opinion. I mean, you hit it right on the head at the end there. This kid played at Duke last year. I mean, there was no player, and Trae Young, it wasn't even close, and we all got tired of Trae Young promotion. Like, this kid was promoted. That team, when they went on the road, were the Beatles. I mean, he was on everything and continues to be like that. So to say that the volume would be turned up in New York, I mean, he's capable of going anywhere. He's got the demeanor. He's got the disposition to, I think, flourish wherever. And I think he's become so savvy at dealing with all of that. He almost comes off as like this super humble dude who's been coached to be that way. And I got to be honest, I think it comes naturally for him. Like, I think he's just that way. The way that he was able to get along with Barrett and in that environment, I don't share that opinion. It will be different. There's no question about it. But I think the league, and we saw this the night of the lottery, Josh, like, I think the NBA is going to promote him and use him like crazy. And it doesn't matter what market you're in, the media and the attention was going to find him and will find him. So I don't share that opinion.
It's Chris Spatola of ESPN on Twitter at Chris_Spatola. You mentioned the Beatles and Beatlemania. I remember somebody brought up that concept to him. I think it was C.L. Brown, fittingly, of The Athletic, to Coach K. And he said, funny enough, I don't think most of my players know who the Beatles are now. And on a final postscript, today's actually Paul McCartney's 77th birthday today. Do you have a favorite Beatles song, Chris Spatola?
I do, my friend. Blackbird. Absolutely. Huh.
Blackbird.
Always.
Absolutely. Very, very well done. Hey, we'll enjoy following your coverage on Twitter and on ESPN. Be well. We'll chat sometime soon.
All right, Josh. Be good.
You got it. That is Chris Spatola of ESPN. Always bringing great insight from the combine on all things college basketball. Talking Beatles there. Forgot to ask if he had a Guilty Pleasure TV show, because mine is The Bachelorette, and lot of stuff happening in the Bachelor Mansion and such. Our Bachelor Minute is next on The Drive.
One, two, three, here we go. Ow!
This is The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
Similar to how Game 1 of the NBA Finals was the Pascal Siakam game, I think today's show has been the Intern Nick show. David Glenn, our early afternoon host, with us now. Intern Nick is a student at NC State, and we learned 20 minutes ago that he could only name one Beatle, which so happened to be Paul McCartney, and it is his birthday. It's his 77th. But during the break, I saw on my Twitter feed, a question was asked: would NC State fans take a non-lethal gunshot in the thigh if it guarantees UNC would be terrible at basketball for the rest of their life? Intern Nick immediately perked up and said, yeah, I'm taking that gunshot. And this, I think, is an area I'd like to explore. DG, it's good to have you on the show on Twitter at David Glenn Show. You can listen to noon to 3. Before we get to the NC State portion of this, the Beatles. I just got a text message from somebody who told their friend, multiple text messages now, who said that they have relatives who are younger than 25 years old and friends who do not know the names of more than one Beatle. How does that make you feel?
Sad and old, just as a starting point. And how about this? I will pay for a DG Show listener or a Sports Hub listener, or both, to go see the movie. I think it's called Yesterday. It comes out at the end of this month. It has Beatles themes left and right. I won't ruin the whole plot, but let's just say a young person, because of a weird turn of events, knows all the Beatles songs, and yet the world that surrounds him as a young musician has never heard any of these famous songs. So as you can imagine, he becomes a star. That's as far as I'll go with the spoiler alert, but you've seen the commercials. So as a matter of education, Josh, I will personally give away tickets to the movie Yesterday so that we know that John Lennon and Paul McCartney and George and Ringo were the essential elements in that world-famous foursome that gave us some of the greatest music that our planet has ever seen and heard.
Intern Nick, you down for the book report?
Yeah.
Okay, good enough. What's your favorite Beatles song? Who's your favorite Beatle, DJ?
I'm going to go John Lennon's favorite Beatle. If you extend the parameters of favorite Beatles song, I would say the song Imagine by John Lennon is the greatest song ever by anybody. I love the song. I love the theme. I love the meaning. Now, that's not technically the Beatles quartet. So if you made me go to the quartet best Beatles song, I might go with a little Ferris Bueller's Day Off Twist and Shout.
Wow.
As he performed that at the end of that movie. But man, Hey Jude and Yesterday and Strawberry Fields, man, there's a lot of great options even beyond maybe the ones that the younger folks would remember even more.
Would you take, do you think most NC State fans would take a non-lethal gunshot in the thigh if it guaranteed UNC would be bad at basketball the rest of their lives?
I think most of them would say yes, but then when it came time to, you know, walk the plank and smoke the cigarette, you know, and sign the legal disclaimer form, you have agreed to be shot in the leg. I think a lot of folks would bail out at that point, but would there be a percentage who would take it, knowing it's non-lethal? It's only the thigh, right? Can you make sure you don't aim for a major artery? I can picture these conversations. Yeah, there'd be a percentage of Wolfpack Nation that would do that because, I guess, of the eternal bragging rights or never having to hear Carolina basketball fans brag again. But it's a lot smaller percentage who would do it than who say they would do it.
I might take it a step further. See, you mentioned the movie yesterday where you have the guy who knows all the Beatles songs and he's the only one in the world able to do so, so he gains fame that way. The only person who knows all the Beatles, if you're the State fan, I'm assuming it's just one person, if it's your decision that leads to North Carolina being bad at basketball the rest of your life, you're a star. You're going to be the most popular NC State fan forevermore. They're going to give you a statue. They're going to put your name on a building, probably, if you had to think of it in those terms. But moving things across to the NBA, there's no good transition there. When you look at the number four pick, the New Orleans Pelicans have it now from the Lakers. And I think they have a pretty good supporting cast already. And what's going to surround Zion Williamson, if you don't even consider the number four pick, who you could potentially take there. If you're looking at it from a general manager's perspective, what do you do with that pick?
I would trade it if I felt good about what I was going to get in return. Because, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here, as you know, but Drew Holiday is already there. Now you have a point guard in Lonzo Ball. Do you really like Lonzo Ball as your point guard? Or are you going to trade him and find somebody else to be your point guard? Because if you like Lonzo, well, then a guy like, you know, Kobe White is not in your plans. Or another point guard is not in your plans. You're not going to add a point guard if you just traded for Lonzo Ball. You know, is Brandon Ingram in your plans? Is Josh Hart in your plans? If you really have all that young talent and you can get a quality veteran, and I don't mean like 30-year-old, I just mean 25 years old in the NBA nowadays means you've been around for a little while. The number four pick they got from the Lakers overall for Thursday night, man, you can get something quality back for that, maybe even more than one player. And the next thing you know, you're not only a playoff team, you might be a top four seed playoff team with that kind of rotation, blending the older with the newer. Now, it's just a matter of what they believe in and what's Drew Holiday going to do. And I mean, I like DeAndre Hunter. If you're going to make a pick, I don't think he truly sort of overlaps with any of the other talents that they have. You might say a Brandon Ingram, but that's a guy with a work ethic in DeAndre Hunter out of UVA. He's a defender. He's a shooter. He's going to get better because you know he's going to stay out of trouble and work hard. So that's one possibility from ACC country if the Pelicans choose to hold that pick.
How do you evaluate who wins a blockbuster trade such as the Anthony Davis Lakers trade? Because when I consider it, DG, I'm thinking, who's better off over the next 10 years? And most times than not, every time, it doesn't matter what the team's giving up to acquire the star player. In the history of the NBA, the team that acquires the star pretty much always wins the deal. And that might be the case here. But considering all the Pelicans got back and that they're about to draft maybe the most highly touted player since LeBron James on Thursday night in Zion Williamson, I look at the Pelicans' next 10 years, and I'd prefer that over what the next 10 years are going to look like for the Lakers with AD and LeBron James with 3 years left in his deal at the age of 34 years old. But where I started, that's how I evaluate a blockbuster trade.
Yeah.
The next 10 years, how do you?
Well, I'd probably look more at like a five-year window, given how fluid the NBA can be. But I see your point, and I think I probably take a different road to the same end result. Here's my bottom line. Everybody in the world knew that Anthony Davis was not staying with New Orleans. What does that do by definition? It dramatically drives your trade value down because everybody knows you publicly demanded for a trade, or your agent did. You got fined for it. And that makes it harder to make a deal. So credit to David Griffin, formerly of the Cavaliers, remember, knew this was not Dell Demps, the GM, who had had problems with the Lakers in previous conversations. This is a new guy who did not budge and did not panic and got a talented young point guard in Lonzo Ball and got Brandon Ingram, got Josh Hart, and got three first-round draft picks. So his worst-case scenario was Anthony Davis walking out that door and him getting little or nothing eventually. So he protected that franchise's next 5 years or even, as you said, next 10 years. Now, the Lakers, I think, did a smart move, but that's much closer to Russian roulette. I mean, it's a fun starting point to have 34-year-old LeBron, who's still an all-NBA caliber player, and now in his prime 26-year-old Anthony Davis, and Kyle Kuzma is still there. They're a playoff team, but they have salary cap problems. They don't even know how to get, they're going to round out their starting five, much less their rotation or their roster, and it's going to be tricky. I don't know how they're going to build around those guys. So the Lakers are about star power. The Lakers are about that closing window for LeBron James. The Lakers' backs were up against the wall. They had to do something and quickly because they'd already burned a year of LeBron's later prime, I guess. So I get why the Lakers did it, but the Pelicans are in a much safer place, and it is high risk, high reward for the Lakers.
David Glenn, our early afternoon host. You can listen to noon to three right here on the Sports Hub on Twitter at David Glenn Show. One quick basketball note. You mentioned Zion Williamson. You talked about, obviously, DeAndre Hunter, too, from Virginia. Which ACC player outside of the lottery, though, do you like the most in this year's draft?
If you only give me one, I'll say Ty Jerome of Virginia. If you give me two, I'll add Cam Johnson of UNC. And Ty Jerome, a lot of people view him as a college-only type guy, right? He's a point guard. He's not uber-athletic by NBA standards. He's not uber-long by NBA standards. He wasn't a huge scorer with the Cavaliers. I just think that that guy, his toughness, his defense, his shooting ability, his work ethic, the good head on his shoulders, and you're not going to find a tougher competitor than that guy. When you're at the end of the first round, you're looking for a rotation guy. You're looking for, you know, the Danny Green, the Fred Van Vliet, you know, a lot of those Raptors that just helped them win the NBA title were latter first round or second round guys or even a free agent in Van Vliet's case. I think Ty Jerome can be a rotation player on a great NBA team, and because of his shooting ability and his length, I think Cam Johnson at 6'9", and he'll have no problem hitting threes at the NBA level. Now, he needs to be on a team where others get him open, of course, but he absolutely could be the kind of sharpshooter that Van Vliet just was for the Raptors, or, you know, Ray Allen has been for other NBA champions. Those are two guys outside the lottery that I think can stick in the NBA and play there for a long time.
I wanted to get your thoughts on this story I read in The Athletic earlier today. The title, A Cashless Super Bowl Could Be Coming Soon, What Does the Growing Trend for Sports Venues mean for fans? And it's about how the Baltimore Ravens are looking at potentially next season, so 2020, not allowing for cash to be accepted at the stadium. It has to be plastic, credit card, debit card, or payment app in order to pay. You have Mercedes-Benz Stadium looking at this as well, the home of the Falcons and Atlanta United of MLS. You have the Tampa Bay Rays, Tropicana Field, Tottenham FC just opened up a mega stadium in London, and that stadium opened cashless in April. Do you carry much cash still? Do you still carry big bills or not so much?
Not as much as I did, for sure. I mean, just because of the way the world has changed. I will tell you this, and I don't think you've been to the Glenn House enough to know that this is the case. I'm like a volume buyer. In other words, I dislike going to the mall so much that I'll just do everything that I need for like the next 6 months in one trip. And I don't like going to the grocery store. So except for perishable items, I will buy the non-perishable stuff a month or two at a time. I mean, I will stock my garage refrigerator with beer so that I don't need to think about beer again for like 3 months. And I'm a little bit that way with the cash machine. So if you got me one day, I might not have a dollar in cash, But if you after I made my once every 2 month trip to the cash machine, you know, I might need a guard to walk around. So I'm sort of all or nothing when it comes to carrying cash.
I mean, here's the thing, though. Let me ask you this. Do you find you spend cash more when you have it in your pocket or spend less of it?
Nah, I'm a disciplined guy that way, man. I'm the son of an air captain. So I don't let the money burn a hole in my pocket that way. If I need something, you know, sometimes we'll be late eating for the show, and I just spring for the whole staff. So occasionally, you know, obviously, usually you can use your credit card, but occasionally, you know, there's a food truck outside, and you're not 100% sure that their credit card machine is working that day. So for those emergencies, I got to carry at least a little wad of cash around, in part because at this stage of my career, unlike, you know, my starving 20s, for example, when there is a bill that arrives, about 95% of the time, it's my turn to pay the bill, and that requires a little extra.
Last thing for David Glenn, last important thing. How much change, or what does the change total have to be for DG to tell the cashier you can keep it?
Oh, man, I don't know. I drop those pennies into the little penny things that they used to have. Do they even have those?
They still
anymore?
Have those. They still have those.
I round up on all of my tips. So
always.
I don't find myself, I don't know, if I got 3/4 and 4 pennies, I'd probably drop the pennies, but I'd probably save those quarters for some, like, you know, random parking machine or something like that, just in case.
For me, if it's less than a quarter, I tell them to keep it. That might be bad, but like, that's it. I just say, hey, yeah, you can keep it if it's less than a quarter. I don't want the coin.
Yeah, I couldn't afford that in my starving 20s. You're way ahead of the curve.
DG, it's always good to hear from you. I'm going to be on vacation next week. You're going to be on vacation next week. What a time to be alive.
What are the sports fans of North Carolina going to do?
DG, we'll talk sometime soon. Thanks for doing this.
All right, bud. I'll see you.
You got it. That's David Glenn. I'll tell you what the sports fans will do. I had lunch with Stan Cotton earlier today. Stan Cotton, Larry Sorensen going to be in these chairs next week at about this time. We're going to be broadcasting our show on Monday next week from the NSMA. Going to chat with all these great sportscasters from across the state in Winston-Salem. Across the country, I should say, and across the state. And then I'm going to be off Tuesday through Friday. So Desmond's going to be in this chair one day. Dave Gorin from the NSMA in here. Darren Vaught going to fill in one day. And as I mentioned, Stan Cotton and Larry Sorensen. So we'll have a big week of shows next week while I'm out on vacation. I just hope my job will be waiting for me the following week. Like, I hope our general manager or somebody with Curtis Media doesn't walk in with like a big wad of cash, like a big cash bag, saying, hey, here's Josh's job. And then I come back and it's a situation where things aren't so great.
Like a Scrooge McDuck money bag with like the dollar sign,
yeah,
on
like
it?
The Scrooge McDuck.
I can see them just dumping out a bag of nickels onto the desk. Like, here you go. It's all for you.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I mean, I don't want it to be the Wally Pip of radio situation. Like, I'm out for a week and then I come back and, oh, there's Lou Gehrig.
All the locks are changed. Yeah. We've tinted the windows. Can't see inside.
What do you got in Take It to the House today?
Bigfoot is real. He lives in North Carolina and he loves candy.
Ah!